Okay, Tov, and welcome back to another ongoing series of Shiurim and Daf Yomi. We are now at the beginning of the 12th parak of Masechet Ketubot, and we'll be studying this parak over the course of two podcasts, each one covering approximately a daf and a half. We'll begin on Daf Kuf Aleph Amud Bet. Hanoseta Isha Upaska Imo Kadeshi Azunet Pitach Hameshanim. So if a man marries a woman and made an agreement, this woman was previously married and she has a daughter, and he made an agreement that he would feed her daughter for 5 years, he's obligated to do so. Now, that statement itself doesn't seem to be so surprising, but it is established to build on to, for the next piece. Let's say that this widow is divorced and then marries another man. And the new husband makes the same agreement. He is also obligated to take care of her for 5 years, even though she's still within the 5 years of being fed by the first one. So lo yomar rishon l'chshetavo etzli azuna, the first husband can't say, let her come to me and I'll feed her here. Elam olich la mezunotah elam akom she'ima, he has to feed her where the mother is, which is at the second house. V'chein lo yomar mushne ma'arenu zaninotah ke'achad, and the two husbands, the ex-husband and the present husband, can't say, together we will feed her, meaning that we'll split the cost. One has to feed her, and the other one has to give her money for food, which she can then put away as savings. In other words, each obligation is it holds, and they, if they overlap, they do not then get subsumed within each other. Niseit, let's say that the daughter marries. Her husband has to feed her, just like in any other case. That does not free them from their obligation. They both have to give her money for mizonot. Now, Meitu, let's say that these husbands die, but the fathers, meaning the husband of the widow, their own daughters will be fed only from free assets, but this girl, with whom there was an agreement, an earlier agreement, will be fed from stuff that was mortgaged, because she is like any other Baal Chov. Unlike daughters who are fed from the estate, which is a din of Yerusha, This girl is fed as a balat chov, because the man obligated himself to feed her for 5 years, and that obligation will hold past his death, and that will hold on to anything that became a shuba after the beginning of the agreement. So habikchim ayu kotvim. Let's say that a clever person was put into the situation where he's marrying a woman, and the woman says, "I'll only marry you if you agree to support my daughter for 5 years." What would he write? He would write, "Amanat she'azunet pitei chamesh shanim kozman she'atimi." He said, I will agree to feed your daughter as long as you're living with me. 5 years, as long as you're living with me. That means that if he dies, that means that if she gets divorced, that means if for any other reason the circumstance is not the same as it is now, then he doesn't have to feed her any longer. Okay, Itmar. Now we're going to backdoor this through a dispute between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish about something which may or may not be related. A says to B, in front of witnesses, I owe you money. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Chayav, Rish Lakish Amar Patur. So Rabbi Yochanan says Chayav, Rish Lakish says Patur. Hechidami, what's the circumstance? Ida Amar Lehu Atamedai, if the A said to the witnesses, you are my witnesses, so my Tavan Rish Lakish to Kapatur, why would Rish Lakish say you're Patur? After all, you appointed witnesses to your acknowledgement of a debt. If he didn't say that, why would Rabbi Yochanan say you're chayav? After all, me coming up to you and saying, oh, you money doesn't mean anything. And if two guys happen to overhear it, but I didn't designate them as witnesses, they are not helpful here as witnesses. So the olam d'lokam lahu atemedai. So we have to talk about a circumstance where he did not appoint them witnesses. What's the circumstance? Where A said to B, I owe you money as per a shtar. And we're not holding a shtar, but he admits that there's an obligation which is grounded in a shtar. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Chayav, why? Alima milta de shtara, kaman damar lehu atame dami. That Rabbi Yochanan says the statement that it's in a shtar is as strong as designating these guys as witnesses. Rish Lakish Amar Patur, lo alima milta de shtar. Rish Lakish says the statement of a shtar is not as strong as that, and therefore doesn't create the chiyuv. All right, that's the machloket. Those are the contours of the machloket. Now let's test it against what we may know from elsewhere, from our Mishnah. An hanosei et ha'isha. Paskai mozun bita chamesh shanim, chayav zunah chamesh shanim. So our opening statement. My love, Ki Agavna, aren't we talking about the same kind of circumstance where he said to the woman at the marriage, I'm going to take care of feeding your daughter, and he's chayav, which supports Rabbi Yochanan, lo, b'shitre psikta. This is a unique kind of an agreement called shitre psikta, which we refer to as tnaim. Rav Gidol Amar Rav, it's a famous statement of Rav, kama tanoten levincha, the bride's family says to the groom's family, how much are you giving to your son to support him in this marriage? Kach v'kach, they say this much. Kama tanoten levitcha, and the other family says to the bride's family, how much are you giving to your daughter? Kach v'kach. Amdu v'kidshu, and if immediately on the spot they went and did kiddushin, kanu, then those obligations become valid and obligatory. Hein hein advar manikni v'amira. These are things that are acquired through amira. In other words, that the backbone of this kinyan is the kiddushin, and the oral agreement rides along with that, with those kiddushin, and becomes valid. So the same thing here, when the guy marries the widow, at the marriage, he says, on condition that I'm doing this on condition that I support your daughter for 5 years, the kiddushin are what drives it, and it has nothing to do with the issue of Yochanan Rish Lakish. Now, Toshma, let's see if we can solve Yochanan Rish Lakish in another way. Katav l'koin shani chayav l'cha chamesh shleim. Let's say a fellow wrote a shtar to a coin saying, I owe you 5 shkalim. Chayav l'tem l'chamesh shleim, you chayav to give it to him. Uvno, I know pandui, but it does not redeem your son. In other words, even though that's the right amount and is the right guy for Pidyon HaBen, nonetheless, it doesn't work. Now, why would that be? Why would it be the case that you're saying this statement to the Kohen obligates you to pay? Shani, doesn't that support Rabbi Yochanan? Shani hatam de meshubad le midoraita. Here it's different because you already have a chiyuv that the Torah places on you to pay the Kohen 5 shkalim. So iachi amai katav. So why did you write it if you're already chayav? You wrote it in order to identify which coin you plan to give it to. In other words, your son was born, and 30 days later you have a chiv of Pidyon HaBen. And that's a chiv the Torah placed on you. So when you said to a particular coin, I'm going to give you 5 slayim, you're identifying which coin it has to go to. So so why isn't the kid redeemed when you give him the money? So kid'ula. It follows Ula's reasoning. Really, the minute you give the money, the kid is redeemed. So why did the rabbis say the kid is not redeemed? So the people will not think that you can redeem using a shtar. In other words, if I'm giving the Kohen a shtar that says, I owe you 5 shkalim, people are going to think that that's the redemption. And to remove that, we say this entire redemption is no good, and you still owe him the 5 shkalim for Pidyon HaBen. Which means, by the way, now you have something curious, which is a chiyuv d'rabbanan of Pidyon HaBen. Okay, so Amar Rava. Rava says that perhaps the machloket of Rish Lakish, which, by the way, did not speak to our Mishnah and did not speak to the issue of Pidyon HaBen, may be associated with this machloket. Let's say a cosigner is signed underneath the Edim. That's what Arev is, a cosigner who signs his name below the Edim. According to Tanakama, the borrower, the lender can collect, if the borrower doesn't have money, the lender can collect from the Arev, from the cosigner, but only from free assets of the cosigner. Rabbi Shmuel confirmed this. Amar lo ben Nana. So Shimon ben Nanas turned to Rabbi Shmuel and said, "Eino gover lo ben chosim neichon v'lo ben chosim shubadim. You cannot collect at all." Amar lo lamas. Rabbi Shmuel said, "Why can't you collect? After all, the guy's name is signed on the star as an arev." Amar lo hareshaya choneket chaviro bashuk. Let's say you saw another fellow choking somebody in the shuk because he owed him money. And you saw him and you said, leave him alone, I'll pay you. Patur, you're certainly patur from paying. After all, when the guy who's choking the other guy lent him money, he didn't lend him based on you paying him back. You have no chiyuv here. And obviously when you said it, you were doing just to save your friend's life. So you're not chayav. In the same way, the borrower did not borrow money from the lender with the cosigner as part of the deal because he's signed below the witnesses. And therefore, it's not chayav. Now that sounds like Aramach Loka Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish, that if you say, I owe you something bishtar, are you chayav or not? Seems to be Rabbi Shmuel and Ben Anas. So Leim Rabbi Yochanan Damarik Rabbi Shmuel, Rish Lakish Damarik Ben Anas. No, the answer, that won't work. And by the way, the reason that that's a challenge is then why didn't Rabbi Yochanan simply say Halacha Rabbi Shmuel and Rish Lakish say Halacha Ben Anas? The answer is they're not the same. Aliben ben nanas kuli amar l'pligi. Within ben nanas, everybody will agree that there is no chiyuv whatsoever. Ki pligi aliben Rabbi Shmuel. They're disagreeing within Rabbi Shmuel, meaning we all accept Rabbi Shmuel halacha, and we could interpret that and apply it differently to our case. Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yochanan reads it straight up, just like your chayav for signing your name below the edim, so your chayav when you say, I owe you b'shtar. Rish Lakish, what will he do with him? An kam lakam Rabbi Shmuel hatam, el adashayach leshibudu daraita. Rabbi Shmuel says, you're chayav because you're associating yourself with a shibud daraita. After all, there is a good loan in this shtar, and you're associating yourself with it. That's why you're chayav. Here, you're out of the blue saying, I owe you money. There's no shibud that you're associating yourself with that could be mitchayev here. So now back to, again, we have not solved Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish. We just see that the machloket does not follow along the contours of another machloket and is not necessarily challenged by Canaanite's law. Back to Rav's halacha about the shitre psikta. That's the statement. Rava says that this halacha would fit and would make sense if we're talking about a case where the daughter is a na'ara. Why? Because the father of the na'ara is getting hana'a from what they're giving her, because that's an obligation that he's now being relieved of. But a bogeret who he's not responsible for in any case, so he's not gaining anything from the fact that they're giving her more or less, lo! So Rava limits the halacha of Rav to a case where the girl's a na'ara. V'ha Elohim, the Gemara responds, Amarava filu bogeret. Indeed, Rav said it, even in a case of bogeret. Why? Tilote mahachi avia ben mai hanoa ateliadei. Because how are you going to explain the other side? How does the father of the groom get any benefit here? If you're going to say that the benefit that drives the kinyan is all based on the financial relief that each family is getting as a result of the other family pitching in, that doesn't work because the groom's father has no obligations in any case that he's being relieved of. It's the hanah that they're getting, the fact that they're marrying, the pleasure they're getting out of the fact that they're making this marriage happen, that's the pleasure that generates the kinyan. It's important to note at this point that all kinyanim have two components to them which are necessary. One component is the formal aspect, that there has to be a real kinyan. And that's what we've discussed previously about, is Amira good enough? Is Kanomi Ado? The different forms that make it happen. Besides that, every kinyan has to have a backbone of Hana. There has to be some benefit that's going to each side that makes the kinyan happen. And that's the essence of this question here. What Hana happens to, arrives to each family that makes this kinyan happen? And the answer is that it's the Hana that they're getting pleasure out of the fact that their kids are getting married to each other. Good. Amar le Ravina le Ravashi. So now he asked him, Dvarim halalu nitnu likatev alo nitnu likatev. Are these, the shitre psikta, if they want to get witnesses to sign on and make it a formal thing as opposed to an oral agreement, are we allowed to do that or not? Amar le lo nitnu likatev. So Ravashi said they're not allowed to. Eitive, apichin ayukot vina manat shazunat pitech chamesh shanim. The end of our Mishnah, which again is talking about something like Shitre Psikta. It's talking about agreements made before the Kiddushin. And what did the end of our Mishnah say? Smart guys would write down, I'll take care of your daughter for 5 years, etc., but they would write it. Right, so now, my Kotvin, what does Kotvin mean? Omrim. Kotvin doesn't mean write, although it means write. Here it is interpreted as, it means they would say it. V'kar le lamir aktiva, since when do you use the word Kotev to mean Omer? Indeed, in the beginning of the ninth parak, we said that if a man writes to a woman, we said it's before they got married, I will have no claim over your property. And Rabbi Chiya, if you recall, read that Mishnah not as HaKotev, but HaOmer, meaning that when you say the word Kotev, you don't necessarily mean that it's in writing. Sometimes it could mean saying. And therefore, in our Mishnah, since it is something that's not allowed to be written, therefore, the wise ones would write, meaning this is what they would say. And we're just using colloquially because generally shtar wrote the written. Okay, good. So let's see if this holds up that you don't write these things. Toshma, ein kotvin shitre erusin v'nisuin elamidat shnehem. We have a statement that you're not allowed to write shitre erusin v'nisuin. We assume shitre nisuin is a ketubah. that you can't write it unless both parties are in agreement. Means, obviously, you can't write something for somebody that they don't accept, but you could write it before you ask them, and then if they agree to it, then you could sign witnesses. The answer is no. You have to write it when they both are in agreement in advance. Obviously, it means that you write it in advance. You can write it, if they're agreeing, which means that that you are allowed to write Shitra Erusin. So my love, Shitra Psikta, isn't that talking about Shitra Psikta? Lo, Shitra Erusin Mamish. No, what it means is a real Shtar Erusin. After all, remember, a woman can become Mikudeshet through three things, Kesef, Shtar, and Bia. What's Shtar? You take a piece of parchment worth less than a Shava Pruta, because otherwise it's Kesef, and you write on Hare At Mureset Libishtar Zet, or At Mikudeshet Libishtar Zet. So that's what it's talking about. That opinion that you cannot write it without Dachnehem follows Rav Papa and Rav Sharavia. If you wrote it on behalf of that particular girl, but without asking her first, and you had in mind a particular Rachel, and you wrote Kishtar Erusin to that Rachel, but you didn't ask her first, and then you asked her and she agreed to marry you, then Rav of Ravina Amri Mekudeshet, Rav Papa of Sharavia Amri and Mekudeshet. It's machloket whether Mekudeshet, and the statement that says you're not allowed to write it, Elamidat Shneim, follows the opinion that says Ena Mekudeshet. Okay. Toshma, Meitu Ba'en Ar Mishnah, Menotein Nizonot, Menachosim B'nei Chorin, V'inizonim Menachosim Mishubadim. We said that this girl who had the agreement, which we now say was an agreement made orally before the Kiddushin, gets to collect from her stepfather, her ex-stepfather, gets to collect even Nechosim Meshubadim. Neshiki Balat Chov. So how could that be a Balat Chov? There's nothing Bishtar. The answer is Achamaz Kinyan Kshakanom Yado. That they made a Kinyan at the time of the marriage, a separate Kinyan about this thing, about this this obligation, which makes it as strong as if it were written Bishtar, and therefore allows her to collect from that. It's a Yachi Banot Nami. So why don't the daughters get to collect from Meshubadim? The answer is Kanulazu velo Kanulazu. They only made the kinyan for this daughter, but not for the subsequent daughters that are going to come along. Who might psaka? How could you make such an arbitrary determination? And the answer is Ida Hava Bishat Kinyan, Matni Mahanila Kinyan. She, who was around at the time of the kinyan, she's a stepdaughter. She's already in the world. So the kinyan works for her. But no, to Lohava Bishat Kinyan, Lohanila Kinyan. Therefore, if the Almana tried to make such a deal with her new husband for daughters they're going to have later, it won't work because they're not around. So Milo Askin and Dahava Bishat Kinyan Vehechidami. So maybe you could make an argument for the situation where they are around in the time of the kinyan. How's that going to Gersha Bahadra? That he divorced her and then took her back. And so these girls are already around, and they are Benan Nukva, and they are their daughter, their joint daughters. So why wouldn't the kinyan work?
The
answer is very simple. The girl herself, the stepdaughter, is not covered by any Tanai Beitin. If her mother doesn't act on her behalf, she has nobody to support her. So therefore, this kinyan is meaningful, and therefore the kinyan is meaningful enough to carry her through even to Nechasim Meshubadim. The girls are already covered by the Tanai Beitin of Benon Nukvan that we saw in the fourth parak, which is that any daughters that the woman and her husband have together are going to be fed by him until they get married. So therefore, Migra Gari, why should they be worse off because they have Tanai Beitin? We have to fine-tune this a little bit, which is that since the daughters are covered by Tanai Beitin, our concern is that the father, before he died, may have given them some metaltalin as an advance payment on food, and therefore they can only collect from Bnei Chorin. However, this girl, he has no reason to have done that, and therefore she can collect from Nechasim Meshubadim, even if you want to create the very strange Ukimta, where the other girls were around, and the kinyan was made for all of them, and he divorced this woman and then took her back, and nonetheless, only the outside daughter is going to be able to collect from Meshubadim, because there'd be no reason to suspect that the father would have given her any metaltalin. Okay, back in our Mishnah, we said, Lo Yom HaRishon, the first husband can't say, if you recall, if she marries another man, he can't say, I'm going to give her a zonot when she comes to me. Rather, he has to give it to her where her mother lives. Rechista zotomer pat etzel ima. What does this prove to you? It proves that the daughter goes with her mother. The daughter should be raised by her mother, and in case there is a separation like this, the daughter should stay with the mother. So, Mimai the Bigdolaskin, and who says we're talking about a girl who's an adult? Dilma Biktanaskin, we're talking about a little girl. I mean, Shemaisa Shaya, because we're going to hear about a very terrible story that happened, in which we realize that leaving a young heir on the estate could be very troubling. Tatanya Mishamet Vinyach Ben Katan Limo, let's say that a guy died, and there was a little boy left. Yoshea Avomrim Yehe Gadel Etzlenu. So the heirs say, we want to raise him ourselves. V'imomer Yehe B'nei Gadel Etzli. And the mother says, no, I'm going back to my father's house and I'm taking him with me. We let him go with the mother. Notice the wording. We don't leave him with the ones who could inherit him. Why? There was a story that happened where they actually killed this kid because they could inherit from him. So this little kid was left there. And the mother left, and the kid was left on the property with the other heirs, and they killed him, and therefore they inherited his stuff. So we let them go with the mother. Now, maybe, therefore, our Mishnah is only referring to a little girl, and therefore she goes with the mother because of that. That doesn't prove that an adult girl always goes with the mother. So, imkein litni makom shehi. If that was the case, though, then the Mishnah should just say she should go to the place, the food should go to the place where she is. Maila makom sheima. Why does it say it goes to the place where her mother is? Shamat mina bat etzal ha'em lo shnag dola v'lo shnag tana. That proves to you that the girl always goes to her mother. It doesn't matter if she's a tana or gdola. All right. So the last clause, the second next clause in the Mishnah said lo yomru shnehem, that if she marries another man, the two of them can't say, oh, we'll join in together and pay, but rather one has to pay support her fully with food, and the other one gives her food payments. Now, here's a story that may relate to this. Ahu Gavra, there was a fellow, to Ogra le Rechaya le Chavre le Tchina. He rented out his mill to another fellow to mill. And instead of payment, he said, you'll mill my stuff. So A leased out his mill to B, and the payment was that B would have to mill A's flour. Le Sofi Atar, A got richer. Zavin Rechaya v'chamra. He bought another mill and a donkey. So he doesn't need this fellow anymore. Hamar liada idna have tchinana gabach. Until now you were milling for me. Hashta have liagra. Now you got to pay me rent. I don't need you anymore. Pay me rent. Amar le mitchan tchinana lach. And B said back to him, I'll continue milling for you. Too bad. Savra avina lemema. So Ravina thought, hanumat nitin, that's the same case as our Mishnah. Lamushne marenu zanino takia achad. El achad zanav echad noten la dme mizonot. He thought that the owner of the mill had the rights to do that, because you can't force the owner of the mill to take flour twice, just like you can't force this girl to take food twice. Rather, one of them has to give payment. So maybe this guy has to, maybe B has to pay him. Amar Ravira midami. Ravira said the cases are not the same. Hatam chad kresa itla. In that case, in our Mishnah, the girl has one stomach. Tarte kresa leitla. She doesn't have two stomachs, so she can't accept food from two different guys for the full food payment. So the guy has to pay her money. Here, B could say to A, you mill in your own mill and sell it. In the meantime, I'll mill and then you'll eat it. In other words, you don't lose anything by me giving it to you. But by the way, this is only true if B doesn't have any other customers. If, let's say, B has other customers, then we say we don't allow him to do midat stom. Midat stom is zen nen nev zeh lo chaser, which means you're benefiting and the other guy's not losing anything. You should go ahead. One guy's benefiting and one guy's not losing. We tell the guy who's not losing, give this thing up, which is not any loss to you. In other words, cede to the other guy, and then he gains. And if B has other customers who are taking his, who are winding up to have him mill, then he should say, you know what, I will pay you rent. Because he should be forgiving in that case. But if he doesn't have such customers, he can insist on his rights to continue paying with flour, and then A should sell the flour that he's milling at his new mill. All right, Emir Tzashem, we will pick up at this point in the next podcast and complete our study of Perek Shnemasar of Ketubot, Noseh Talmana, and we will see the very powerful story of the last days of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi.